I had the schus to be teaching in the yeshiva for many years, and last year it was more or less once a month that I would come in and give you some ideas for the month, because the idea of a Kodesh is that every month is new. You heard this expression, right? The Yom Tov are either early or late, but they're never on time, right? Why? Because if you go by the solar calendar, and this is amazing, you go for September 23rd, and you'll find Zman Kriya Shema is the same every single year, September 23rd, because you're going by the sun. But because we go by the moon, and a month is 29 and a half days, you can't make a month with 29 and a half days, you make it with 29 days or 30 days, and a regular year, you end up losing 11 days, so you have to add in leap years, and it takes 19 years to move through the cycle. And so any given time, any month, there's no given, there's no absolute. So that here in Yerushalayim, we had a number of years in a row where Purim came out on Friday. And that is probably the least fun Purim that you can have. Because, you know, you have to finish your suit and get ready for Shabbos, and it doesn't happen too often. Sometimes it happens in America too. That's only in 2 years it's going to be in America, because here in Yerushalayim we're going to have a Purim Meshulash. Purim Meshulash is only in Yerushalayim can you have this. That Purim, Shushan Purim, comes out on Shabbos. So you can't read the Megillah on Shabbos because you might come to carry it. And you can't read it on Sunday, right? Because you, as you know, the first Mishnah, Yudalev, Yudbez, Gimel, Dalev, Tesvav, you can't go after that time. So you have to read the Megillah on Friday. And you have Matonis Lev Yonim with the Megillah because the Aniyim come to the Megillah. And you can't have your Suda on Shabbos because you won't know it's a Purim Suda. It looks like a Shabbos Suda. So on Shabbos, you just say Al Nisim. And then on Sunday, you have Yesuda and Shalach Manas. And there are some people who are known to be drunk for 72 hours. But when that happens in America, it's Friday. I remember I was in yeshiva, and this guy got very drunk on Friday. The mama slept through Shabbos. And he was so proud of himself. He was like, wow, did you see how drunk I got? I said, yeah, it was beautiful. You missed Kriya Shema Shel Arvis. You missed Kriya Shema Shel Shachris. You missed Ma'ariv, Shachris, Musaf, Mincha. You missed Kiddush. You missed three Sudas. You missed that. What a tzaddik you are. What a hiddur. Yeah. I might as well establish it at the beginning of the year. I'm not really a lot of fun. Anyway, I had... I was teaching in seminary once, you know, and the girls were like, can you think of a good Purim shtick? I said, you looking for a shtick? Yeah, why don't you go through your clothes and take out all the ones you don't wear and give it to poor people who have no clothes? There's a great Purim shtick. Wait, I'll give you another one. Why don't you take all the money that you spend going out for facials and going out to eat and give that money to poor people to buy food? Huh? There's a shtick. Wait, I got another one for you. Anyway, by the end, wasn't much of a Purim. The girl who was wearing the mask took it off. It was like, forget about it, you know? I have a different perspective. The Grinch who stole Purim. But anyway, when you come up, so we had that. We also had a whole bunch of years, a few years back, where first day Rosh Hashanah came out on Shabbos. They didn't have the Kiyas Shofar. There was like 4 out of 5 years like that. Yeah, it happened once in 1600 years. Yeah. And you have other kind of things. So every Chodesh is a new reality. This month has never existed before. You can't set your clock to it. You can't set your calendar to it. Every month is opened with a new possibility. And that's why the Medrash Rabbah says that the Umas HaOlam are compared to the sun and we're compared to the moon. Because the sun stays the same, but the moon waxes and wanes. Yidden, we reach a high point, and then we start to shrink, and then we reappear. And you know, you read through Jewish history, and you'll find that this has been the case over and over and over again. And often in a person's life, it's the same thing. You know, very few people have a life that's just always steady. there are challenges, there are things that come your way, there are difficulties. And now we're at the end of the year, which is strange, right? Especially for the people who just came, because it's the beginning of the year, right? The yeshiva continues to grow. People are fighting to be able to get in, you know, become part of the chosen few, part of the schus to be able to learn here. Yeah, and Baruch Hashem, it goes mechoyo choyo. And so for some people, we're beginning our year. But the truth is, we're at the end of the year. We're at the end, mamish at the end of the year. As Rav Moshe Shapiro once put it, on Rosh Hashanah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu deposits in your account a certain amount of life, and whatever it is, it runs out Erev Rosh Hashanah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to give you new, has to make a new deposit. And it's an amazing thing, you know, we're reaching the end, not reaching the end of the year, we're reaching the end of our lives. And we have to be recreated. We have to start over again. So it's a tremendous thing. Now, like I say, I usually come to speak once a month. So I'm jumping ahead. I'm going to Tishrei. And I want to speak, if I can, about the connection of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And I never understood this kasha. I saw it in a lot of the mafarshim. I never understood the kasha. The kasha is, why do we have Rosh Hashanah before Yom Kippur? We should really have Yom Kippur first, because then get all of your kapara, and then judge us. But it doesn't really make any sense, because I can't pardon you for a crime until you've committed a crime. Yeah? The Gemara increases. Yom Kippur is mechaper if you're chayv in Oshem Talui. If you're not sure whether or not you did an Aveira that you have to bring a Korban Chatas for, you're not sure, you have to bring an Oshem Talui. Yom Kippur takes the place of an Oshem Talui. But not on a Chatzi Shir. If you ate half, you're not sure if you ate half a piece of Chalev or a piece of Shuman, and then after Yom Kippur, another half, so Yom Kippur is not going to help you. You have to know for sure, yeah? Then Yom Kippur has this power to come along. So, but how could you give me forgiveness until I've actually done something? Yeah? This was a major discussion when they were doing the Russia investigation into the President of the United States, whether or not he was in fact a Russian agent. And so one of the questions that came up is, the President can pardon anybody. Can he pardon himself? Yeah. So it's a din, yeah. But certainly I can't pardon you until you do something. So first has to come Rosh Hashanah, and you have to get a din, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu can forgive you. But until we have a trial, until there's tzedek, until there's a mishpat, there's nothing to talk about. So the difference between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is dramatic, and unfortunately, for the average yeshiva guy, what they have in common is that they are both depressing. Or as one guy said to me, I would like to go to sleep Erev Rosh Chodesh Elul and wake up after Sukkot. I said, you don't like Sukkot? He says, V'samachta b'chagecha. If you're not happy, you're going to burn in Gehenna. I can't handle the pressure. Then, I want to be happy on my own terms, not because I have to. Cheer up or else. Yeah. So that's too much of a pressure for me. I can't handle the pressure. And it is pressure. There's a tremendous amount of pressure. Right? So I want to try to give, if I can, a positive read on Rosh Yom Kippur. And the two of them really have such different messages that are so important to understand. Let's start with Rosh Hashanah. What is Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaDin. Isn't that terrible? Of course it's terrible. Everybody's afraid of Din. The Malachim are trembling. Mi Yamod Bayom Adin. Mi Yamod Bayom Adin. Bochen Levavois. Vyayim Adin. Golem Agar. Bahadin. And I grew up with a choir. Din, din, din. Judgment. Absolute judgment. Kadosh Baruch Hu sees everything. He measures everything. Kechut Asara. He doesn't forget anything. He sees everything. There is no way to save yourself before Kadosh Baruch Hu. Oh my gosh, shoot me now. What is the point? Yeah? Bill Clinton was accused by somebody for something, and he said, "It's not true, not true." And then they said, "We have evidence." He goes, "Oh, you have evidence? In that case, I have a different story." But you know, it's whereas Trump doesn't have a problem because he never denied it. No matter what it is, he never did it. Doesn't matter what evidence, it's true evidence. It's all fake news. But you know, but Din, why are we wasting our time? Baruch Hu knows everything I do. He knows everything I've done. You know, trust me, I've been in this field for many years, and there's nothing more frightening than when a teenager comes to me and I discuss a problem, and he says, "Don't worry, Rebbe, I know what I'm doing." I said, "I also know what you're doing. That's the problem." He says, "Don't worry, I have this under control." I said, "Wow, there's nobody who knows themselves less than a teenager who says, I have this under control." Yeah? People don't... That's that powerful, powerful story with the Levi Leo, with this boy who had to go to town for something. And he says to him, "How could you go to town?" He says, "Women not dressed properly." He says, "Don't worry, Rebbe, I won't look." He says, "You won't look?" He says, "How do you know you won't look?" He goes, "I trust myself." He says, "You trust yourself? I'm 80 years old and blind in one eye and I don't trust myself. You're a nice, healthy boy with two good eyes and you trust yourself?" First time I came to Israel was January 1969, a year and a half after the Six-Day War, and according to my revised biography, 15 years before I was born. But I came to Etzel, and you buy postcards. I don't know if they still even have postcards. Yeah, but they used to have these things, postcards, little things with pictures on them, and you could write and mail it to people. I don't know if they still have mail. I don't know. But they were postcards. And there was this one postcard where this woman is walking and this guy is standing like this. You understand? His eyes are covered. He's standing like this. So you trust yourself. We trust ourselves. Yeah. Now, Kodesh Baruch Hu knows. He knows everything. Bochen levavais. He knows what you're thinking. He knows what's in your heart. He knows what you did. He saw where you were. He knows everything. I'm going to walk into Rosh Hashanah. Yom Adin. So, somebody asked me the following question. It's a really interesting question. They said, even if I don't do anything, Hashem will forgive me, right? I mean, Hashem will forgive me, right? I mean, you know. Paraphrasing the German philosopher Goethe, who on his deathbed said to his crying wife, "Don't worry, God will forgive me. That's what he does." So he basically was... He never learned goat, but that's what he's saying to me. He says, "Well, God will forgive me, right?" And I said, "Yes. If you can convince him that you're a baby, then you have no problem." Right? 18-month-old crawls into the kitchen, manages to pull out a bag of flour, makes a mess all over the place, you know, pulls out the pots, everything is all over the place. You walk in, disaster. Disaster. So what are you going to do? Now you see here, young man, you're going to clean up this mess right now. And then you're going to go to your room and we're going to have a discussion. Of course not. 18-month-old, goo-ga-ga-ga. So you sigh and you brush him off, you know, and you try to bathe him, but it's hard because the flour and water turns into paste and you have to, like, scrape it off, you know. So, okay, fine, you get him off, you know, and you know, and you put him in his jammies and stick him in his crib, you know. And then you go in with a sigh and you clean up the kitchen. Because I can't expect anything from him. If you get married and your wife has a similar attitude about you, yeah? She says, "Oh, I'm so overwhelmed, I have to make Pesach. Why don't you ask your husband?" Him? Hey, listen, when he gets up in the morning, he expects a round of applause. You understand, you know? Rabbi Leff once said, you know, today there are a lot of boys who are willing to be meisa nefesh to learn Torah. You buy them an apartment, you buy them a car, you support them. He says, "What's the Mesiris Nefesh? They're willing to get up every morning." So I said this once to a group of Avreichim, and they said, "Well, not every morning, but, you know, certainly many mornings." So So if your wife is like, listen, you know, you got up today, honey. Very good, very good. You know, should I make you breakfast? Make you a little something here? Here comes the airplane. You know, I was like, you know, and, honey, where are my socks? Don't worry, I have them in your drawer. I don't know where you can't find them. Here you go. Well, where are my shoes? I'll find your shoes, you know. And, you know, that's pathetic. That is so incredibly pathetic. And there are guys who want to marry a mommy who's going to take care of them, you know, and because they somehow know deep down that they're not really capable, competent of anything, you know. Someone said, is it a mitzvah to support your children? I said, the Gemara says yes. You have to support them until they can stand on their own, which the Gemara says is 5. If the kid's a little slow, 6. Understand? At that point, father calls him over and says, son, it's time for you to make your place in the world. You know, okay, Dad, you know what I'm saying? Go out and get a profession. Yeah? So the person looked at me horrified, you know? He says, well, it's different today. I said, yeah, it's between 45 and 50, depending on depending on when the parents die and he gets the Yerusha. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, because for people to be able to take care of themselves? I don't know how it works in America, but in Eretz Yisrael, a couple gets married, and then they go one Shabbos to the parents, and the next Shabbos to the in-laws, one Shabbos to the parents, and this continues until their children get married and want to come to them. So now they have to first start making Shabbos for the first time in their life in their 40s, you know what I'm saying? Because they just keep going back and forth, back and forth. Yeah. Because I make Shabbos? It's too much for me. It's overwhelming. I have to make Shabbos. I never heard my parents. Now, again, my parents are maybe your grandparents, maybe a great-grandparents' age, I don't even know anymore. But I never heard my parents complain, I have to make Pesach, you have to make Shabbos. You do what you have to do, you know. But Moshe Nefesh, I got up in the morning, you know. Rebbe, what do you want from me? Rebbe, what do you want from me? That is the theme song of a generation. Rebbe, what do you want from me? Gosh. I came, didn't I? Yes, you did. You're the best boy. You understand? Where's your sticker page? Let me give you a sticker. You're the best boy. You know? Because that's the best we can expect. And that's how we see ourselves. They said there are chagovim, and we felt like chagovim, say the Meraglim. Yeah? We felt like grasshoppers, and they said, there are the grasshoppers. So I'm going to go in for din? What am I capable of? Now, I have a weekly podcast. I'm able to track about 10,000 people listen to it. People tell me there's more because they put it on a WhatsApp group and send it around. I don't know from all these things, but there's a lot of people listening to it, you know, and there are some people who, like, they know all my lines, you know, so when they see me, they say back some of my lines to me, you know, which is good because I don't remember what I say from day to day, so, you know, so people say, you know, I see sometimes you laugh at your own jokes. I said, I'm hearing it for the first time. I forgot that I ever said it, you know, but, you know, so one of the lines said back to me, and this is so true, just because you can't do everything doesn't mean you can't do anything. Chazak, chazak, v'niz chazek. I heard this word from Rabbi Moshe Chait Zatzal, 1975, my first year in yeshiva. And he said, why do you say chazak, chazak, v'niz chazek? He says, you have to say chazak twice for two different types of people who finish a sefer. There are some people who finish a sefer and they say, okay, I finished that, what now? Rabbi Chait once told a story about a guy who during Musa Seder, you know, he said, what should I learn? So he says, Basilis Hasharim. He says, I finished that. You finished it? The Vilna Gaon couldn't find one extra word, and you finished it? The Vilna Gaon at the end of his life kept only two books, a Chumash and Basilis Hasharim, and you finished it? You're done? And I used to be a Rebbe, you know, so I'd give the guys my makomos, you know, and they'd come back, you know, in 15 minutes, go, okay, I'm done. I said, you're done? He says, yeah. I said, you went through the Taisvis? He says, yeah. I said, what's Taisvis Kasha? I didn't say I know every word, you know. A general idea, you know what I mean? Like, you know. Do you know either one of the three Teirutzim he gives? Any of them? I don't know. So more or less. I mean, you know, I can't say it over, but I have a basic idea, you know. Something to do with a get. Okay, that's a safe bet. We all learn in Gittin, so how wrong can you go? You know what I'm saying? But you know, so there are people who say, I learned it already, I know it. And there are people who go to their Rebbe and they say, after they've worked on shit, and he says, I don't know anything. He says, Rebbe, I'm wasting my time here. I don't know anything. He says, what's the kasha? Here's the kasha. What's the teretz? Here's the teretz. What's Teshus' kasha on the teretz? Yeah, what does he answer? Yeah, what's his second answer? I don't know. So you don't know the second teretz in Teshus, and you read that as, I don't know anything. That's a mistake. Identify what you know and what you don't know, because you'll be surprised by how much you know. Why should I bother going into Rosh Hashanah? Because although you haven't done everything right, it doesn't mean you haven't done anything right. And let's give yourself credit for the things that you've done. You're in Eretz Yisrael, sitting in a yeshiva. What do you think, that's worthless in the eyes of a Kadosh Baruch Hu? After 2,000 years of gullus, when we've lost millions and millions of Yidden, and of the Yidden who are left, a fraction of them even know that they're Jews, and of those, an even smaller fraction are frum, and of those, even a smaller fraction are learning in yeshiva, and that's you? The elite of Klal Yisrael? And you've never done anything right? Have you ever davened? Have you ever done this? No, I haven't done that. And an amazing thing, I was talking once in a yeshiva for guys who can move on. It's not a yeshiva like this, you know. It's guys who are works in progress, you know. They have a lot of potential. As when I was in Mashgiach, when they used to tell me, the boy has a lot of potential. I said, forget it. If he hasn't realized any of his potential, you know. Like there used to be an old joke, you know, it says they were selling brains. Einstein's brain went for $1 million. Thomas Edison's brain went for $1.5 million. Your brain went for $50 million. It says, why? It says, it's never been used. You know what I'm saying? Brand new. Potential. Anyway, so I was telling them what an amazing thing that you decided to come to yeshiva. And they were literally fighting with me. And they said, no, I just, you know, I had to come. I said, no, you could have gone to one of those kibbutz programs, you know, where Israelis figured out this scam that they get foreigners to do all their work for them while they go and work in high tech, you know, and they get other people to come and pick their apples, you know what I mean? You could have gone and hung out in a kibbutz, you know, you could have this, you could have that, you know. And the more I tried to insist of all the good things they did, the angrier they got at me. Because it's so much easier to see myself as bad. Yeah? Nobody wants to see themselves as, I'm a good person, because if I'm a good person, then it's mechayev me. And if I just write myself off, hey, I'm no good. The fact that there's a Yom HaDin and that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is judging you means he thinks you're worthwhile, or he wouldn't waste his time. You know that they have a pre-trial to determine whether or not a person is competent to stand trial. They only have evaluation meetings for people that they plan on keeping on. Otherwise, they just say, thanks so much for coming. It's been a pleasure having you, you know, and good luck. Don't let the door slam on their way out. You know what I mean? If they're having an evaluation meeting with you in the office, that's because they think you have made valuable contributions and they want to see how they can maximize your contribution to the organization. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking at you as an individual, Kibbenei Maron, either like sheep passing through one at a time, or a mountain pass where you can only walk single file, or the army of Dover Melech where they march single file. What they all have in common is, as an individual, HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Rosh Hashanah is going to look at you and say, so, what you doing here? You know how many from people have said this to me in one form or another? I feel like it doesn't make a difference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu whether I'm here or not. I said, make no mistake, he has no shortage of ways of getting rid of you. And if you're still here, it's because he thinks you have something to do. It was at my grandson's Shalom Zacha on a Friday night. I started shaking. I started coughing. And I went to lie down. And I had a coughing fit. I couldn't stop. I couldn't breathe. I was calling for help, but nobody could hear me because there's a big party going on outside, you know. Somehow I dragged myself out of bed. I told my wife, call the Chavesh. The Chavesh came, took me to the hospital. Yeah. And they said, it's pneumonia. So I fell asleep. I woke up next morning. I was in the heart ward. I said, what am I doing here? I said, there's indications that you had a heart attack. It wasn't indications. I had an enzyme that you only have when you have a heart attack. But in Israel, no reason to bother telling the patient what's going on. This is for the professionals. Yeah. Anyway, so they scheduled the day of my grandson's birth. They scheduled an angiogram. And I said, I'm sorry, I'm leaving. So they said, you could drop dead at any minute. I said, okay, you got my attention. You know? So they did this angiogram. And I felt fine. Yeah. Anyway, they're sticking the wire in, and they're looking at the little screen, and the two of them are whispering to each other. I had the top guy, you know. And when he pulls it out, so I figure he's going to say, well, we suspected there might be a problem, and da-da-da, you know, and eat better, you know. He pulls out the wire, he says, I can't figure out why you're still alive. You're not getting enough blood to, two of your arteries completely blocked. One is like 70% blocked. You're not getting enough blood to keep you alive. He wasn't a firm guy. He said, someone up there must like you. Now, that made a dramatic impression on me. Because when the top guy looks at the thing and says, gosh, you should be dead. Yeah? That does make an impression. Anyway, I have the surgery. I had to have a bypass. And the doctor, we got the top guy. We made sure we get the top guy in the hospital. He told my wife afterwards, you're lucky that they got me. Because his artery had been dead for so long, it got reabsorbed into the heart. So nobody would have been able to bypass it because it wasn't there. But from experience, I knew where it should have been and I was able to extract it. Otherwise, he'd be dead. So two major doctors told me I should be dead. Kinira, I'm not. That means that the past 5 years I've been living on borrowed time. I told somebody, you know, that I had heard of Vort years ago, that other Marishon, he should have died after the Chait, but he went into Shabbos and he got his Neshama Yesera and that's what he lived on the rest of his life. And the person said, hey, you had your heart attack on Shabbos. So I guess you're also living on your Neshama Yesera. Thank you very much. Anyway, so every morning I wake up and I say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically did a double miracle to keep me here. Which means that I must have something I'm supposed to do in this world. And I figured out it's to be a prop at my grandchildren's simchas. That's the only reason I'm still alive. You know what I'm saying? I can go, I speak a little bit, you know, make the hamotzi, you know, and then they take you back to the home. Anyway. Now, Grandpa, make the hamotzi. Grandpa, good. Okay, take him away. Anyway. I can't figure out what else. Anyway. So that's why I started the podcast. I have something to do. Anyway, you know, people think that Kodesh Baruch Hu just forgot about you. He has to make a decision to keep you here. Every year, he has to make a decision. B'chol yom v'yom. Mechadesh v'tuva b'chol yom tamid. Ma'aseh bereishis. Every day, he has to make a decision to keep you here. If you're here, it's because he wants you here. Because if he didn't want you here, you wouldn't be here. That means that a Kadosh Baruch Hu believes that you have something that you can do in this world that nobody else can do. That's why you're here. More than that, we stood around the mountain at Matan Torah, which means that the guy standing here saw it differently than the guy standing here, and so around. It means that every person got their own perspective on Torah. And there are certain divrei Torah, certain chidushim, certain things that only you can be megala. You might choose not to, and then those will be lost to history. But who knows what your contributions are? Who knows what ideas you can reveal and you can come up with? Yeah, but you don't realize it. You don't realize it. Because we spend so much time convincing ourselves that we're just not that important. And you should know that more than anything, that's what the Yetzer wants to do. He doesn't want you to do Chatoyim. That's small. He's a busy malach. Says the Gemara, as the Yetzer, he seduces you. As the Satan, he accuses you. As the Malach HaMavis, he carries out the sentence. He's a very busy Malach. So the best way to get a person to do things wrong is to convince them it doesn't make a difference. If you believe that your tefillahs don't make a difference, then why should you daven? But if you go over and give somebody a bracha, and then they have a baby, and it sounds kind of crazy, and the person comes over to you afterwards and says, you know, after you gave me that bracha, you know, 9 months later I had a baby, I'm naming him in honor of you. I'm assuming this is Sephardi. Anyway, otherwise they have to kill you first. But, you know, could you, do you believe this? Or you didn't believe it. Trust me, nobody believes that Kosh Baruch is listening to their tefillahs. Nobody believes that the mitzvahs are so important. Because if they did, comes Rosh Hashanah, Kosh Baruch Hu looks at you and says, you are the most important person in creation. That's not me speaking, that's a chazal. Bishvili nivra olam. Every person has to say, I am the most important person in creation. That I have to look at the entire world as half and half, and I am the one who will decide the fate of the universe. It's all been turned to you. That's a pretty awesome responsibility. Yeah? And you say, well, I'm not that smart, I'm not that great, I'm not that firm, I'm not that, I'm not, so what? I just have to make that last step that pushes us over the top. I can be that voice. I can be that person who the straw that breaks the camel's back. And so the Yetzer Hara wants you to believe, nah, it doesn't make a difference what you do. You daven, you don't daven, you don't learn. You know, why should I bother trying? Ay, 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 it's so hard, it's so hard. No, that's not true. There are certain people to whom it just comes very easy. Comes very easy. I, as a child, used to collect learning disabilities. Other kids had baseball cards. I had learning disabilities. I didn't know because they didn't know what they were back then, you know. But later it turned out I have dyslexia, I have ADD, I have focusing problems, I have attention problems. I have that. Every time there's a new one that comes out, they test me for it and I have it. You know, it's like I'm just a total mess. You know, I would look at the page and it would be out of focus. And if I could get it back into focus, it would be backwards. And then if I would read three lines, I forgot what I read. And I'd go back to the beginning and then suddenly I would go to someplace else for a while. And, you know, and put myself back in. It was so incredibly frustrating. A Rebbe of mine once said to one of my bosses, is he effective? He goes, yeah. He goes, I never thought he'd amount to anything. Thank you. It's that confidence that has really carried me through. I understand why. If I had a kid like me, I'd say the same thing. Yeah. But a Yom HaDin comes and a Kodesh Baruch Hu looks at you and says, what are you doing in creation? And you're like, me? Yeah, you. Yeah, you. You can change the world. How? The Fum Tzara Agra, let's say it's tough for you. Let's say doing something is tough for you. Certain people get easy. My wife's an intellectual because opposites attract. Yeah? And sometimes when I'm preparing for a shiur, you know, this is one of those like three-page kliyukers and she goes like this. Okay, saying like this. I can't even read the Al-Shuk. The writing's too small. You know what I mean? You know? And she just runs, you know. She has a gift. I had chavrusas who were just amazing. You know? One of them once said to me, what's it like to forget? I said, I don't remember. So for me, it's a struggle. You know? I have no question when I walk into to Yom Kippur, I walk into Rosh Hashanah, that Kodesh Baruch Hu says the same thing as my Rebbe did. I'm surprised he ever amounted to anything. And I say it to Kodesh Baruch Hu, you got to admit, I did pretty well for a dumb kid like me, with all the problems he gave me. Yeah. Because what am I supposed to do? Kodesh Baruch Hu gives everybody, it's a mixed bag. I had a tekufa in the 1970s. There was a backgammon craze in America, so of course I never liked to let any nonsense slip by me. So I went to the library and took out all the books on backgammon they had. And there's different approaches and different yeshivas and different things that I picked up, you know. And the way you tell a real backgammon player is what he does with a 6-2 opener. That's how you can really tell what his approach is. But anyway, I went through them, and they all had the same yisoid. It was one yisoid they all shared. A real backgammon player doesn't complain about the dice. Because sometimes the dice will go with you, and sometimes the dice will go against you, and what you have to know is what to do with each roll when it comes up. Don't complain about the dice. Yeah. A person could say, gee, if I had his head, if I had his family, if I had his this, and his this, and his this, yeah, shkoyach. That's the mitzvah l'sachmoid. L'sachmoid is beis reyecha, is eishes reyecha. Yeah. Don't be jealous of his house, of his wife, of his cows, of his fields. Why? It's basically, I want to be him. If you were supposed to be him, you would have been him. Yeah. Whereas the Kutzker says, if I am I because you are you, and you are you because I am I, then I am not I and you are not you. But if I am I because I am I, and you are you because you are you, then I am I and you are you. I don't even care if you understand that. The fact that I memorized that. For a kid with my disabilities, that's very impressive. Anyway. But it means at the end of the day, you got to play the hand you're dealt. It would be nice if I got four aces, you know? But I didn't. So I got to play the hand you're dealt. You got to do the best you can with what you have. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to walk in on Rosh Hashanah, and he knows who you are. He knows all your failings, and he knows what you've succeeded at. And the fact that you are being judged means HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels you are a worthwhile investment. He wants to know what you've done and what you're going to do. Such an amazing thing. Because let's face it, everybody wants to make it on their own, at least as much as they can. A little kid wants to tie his own shoe. Yeah, a little kid wants to feed himself. Takes the spoon. Yeah, it goes everywhere except in his mouth. You know what I mean? You know, he wants to feed himself. They want to get dressed by themselves. I went to took my kids once to an amusement park. Most of my children are crazy. I only have one child who's normal, like me. Absolutely horrified by the concept of a roller coaster. I find them absolutely frightening. And I read in Scientific America that people with ADD can't go on roller coasters because they're already on a roller coaster. So I thought that was interesting. But I just panic attacks, you know? And the idea of being strapped into a machine that's going to hurl you backwards 100 miles an hour, upside down, in the dark. If I want to do that, I'll just take a Monit. What do I need to wait online for, you know? But in order to go on the ride, you have to reach the clown's hand. And even my little kids are like stretching because they want to get on the ride. They want to be big. And people want to be big. Nobody wants to be little. I want to be big. And at some point, we forget about that. We forget we want to be big. We forget we want to be great. You know people like this. You know them in your own life. You know them in your community. They just stopped. They just stopped living. They've been in their 40s. You know, they've been in their 50s. They're done. You know, they have nothing else to do. They're just living out their life. And biding their time till death. Nothing for them to do. They're not trying to become better. They're not trying to do great things. They're not trying to... But of course, when it comes to the end of their life, they expect to get a big speech. Sometimes you see these people being honored and there's really nothing to say. This is a person who's accomplished so little. Thank God his father left him money. He's giving it to us and we're making him a dinner. Giving him a plaque for no reason other than the fact that he's giving us money. He's accomplished nothing. He hasn't grown as a human being. He's a crummy husband and father. And eventually he'll die. And so to present you with the Kesser Shem Tov Award. Right? Gosh, you've never seen this? See these people getting honored? And then they have to get up and make a speech? Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for that beautiful award. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the entire organization, and especially my Eishes Chayil, who has been by my... I did this once at a dinner, and then the honoree got up, and he went like this. Thank you very much, Rabbi Orlovsky, for that one. He really prepared the speech, the whole speech that I just made up. Boy, I was embarrassed, but I don't think he even realized. But, so that's it. At the end of our lives, we want to be remembered as people who were great. People who did great things. And don't make the mistake of thinking that great things mean that I have to start Hatzolah. Yeah? Somebody said it, I don't know where the original quote is from, but a gadol is not somebody who does great things, but whatever he does it in a big way. Yeah? Whenever I would go to Simar Shiva of Henoch Leibowitz and Chafetz Chaim, he made me feel like I was the most important person in the world. He had nothing else to do in his day. And he always started out with the same trick. He asked me my advice on something, and it sounded so reasonable. I gave him my advice, and he talked it through a little bit, and he says, oh, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that. Now, what did you want to ask me? He was there every time. There was only one time I went to see him, and he didn't seem like he was so into it. I was a little disappointed. And I told it to his gabbai, so he says, yeah, I know, because that afternoon he was going in for an operation. He was in excruciating pain, but he didn't want to cancel on you. All he did was have a conversation with somebody, and he made me feel like I was the most important person in the world. And if you give somebody a smile and you say good morning, you know, and you just have a consideration for somebody. I did one of the things that I spend a lot of time doing, which is regretting all the times that either I said something or I didn't say something. This is one of the times I didn't say something. I was with my wife in a bookstore. We were going to get a coffee. And there's this guy sitting there by himself reading. And there was only one table left with one chair. So I took the other chair from him. He says, you could have asked if anyone was going to be sitting here. I didn't say anything because I was just so shocked. But I was just thinking about this. I don't know why I was thinking about this every Shabbos. So what I should have said to him is, well, seeing how you speak, I don't think it's really a problem. Obviously, no one's ever going to be sitting here with you. Because you're one of the most miserable people I've ever seen. So how about this? Try smiling, saying hello. Say, oh, it's not a problem. Help yourself. Otherwise, you're going to die lonely in an apartment with a cat. You know what I mean? Because you're just one of the most miserable people I've ever met. I didn't say that to him. Probably it's just as well. You know, why should I make the cat feel bad? But, but you know, what's going to be left for him at the end? So when we do things, it's a smile, it's a kind word, it's something that we do that's, you know, somebody came over to me, there used to be a radio program I used to speak on here in Israel, and this woman came to me and said, you know, you spoke on that show 25 years ago, and 20 years ago, and you said something that I've been doing ever since. You said, when you get on a bus, why don't you slide over? So you want to sit on the outside, so that if a person wants to take the seat, they have to, like, you know, push over to you. And you know those people who just do, like, the little half swivel, you know what I mean? So you have to, like, climb over them. So slide over so that a person could sit down and they don't have to feel bad. And she said, you know, I always sat on the outside. And I said, you're right. I start sliding over. It's a small thing, but it makes the world a nicer place. It's the kind of thing where I can change the world into a world of chesed. I didn't get to Yom Kippur. But we spoke about Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is a Yom Adin, because you can be great. HaKadosh Baruch Hu believes in you and knows that there are things in this world that you can do that nobody else can do. And so we're going to go into Rosh Hashanah optimistic, because I've done good stuff. We spend so much time beating ourselves up on the things that we've done wrong that we never focus on the things that we did right. I'll end with one last story. I don't like to go over time. The famous story of Lazer Silver, who went to the DP camps after the war. He was trying to put together a minyan. And he asked this guy, he says, you want to come daven with us? And he says, I would never daven again. He says, what? He says, when I was in Auschwitz, someone smuggled in a sitter, and he used to charge people a half a day's rations to use that sitter for 10 minutes. we were already on starvation rations. You take away half a person's rations. If someone could do that, I'll never daven again. And the Lazarus soul said, why are you looking at him? Look at how many people were willing to give up a half a day rations to use a sitter for 10 minutes. Well, depends what you look at it. You can look at all the times you miss davening. You can look at all the times you daven. You can look at all the things that you've done right. You can look at all the things that you've accomplished. You walk into Rosh Hashanah, it's a Yom HaDin, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you've done good stuff. Now the stuff that you didn't do that was so good, that we'll talk about on Yom Kippur. But when you go into Rosh Hashanah, you can say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hey, 2,000 years later, I'm sitting in Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, learning Torah, what's that worth on the open market? And I can tell you the following. If you give me life, I can be sure that this year in Yeshiva, I'm going to do even more than I've done before. I'm not going to be perfect. I'm going to be better. I'm going to have more things to talk about come next Rosh Hashanah. Mir Hashem, everyone should have a Kesivah Tzimah.